everyone, and welcome to Marking the Roll. My name is Phil Dye, I'm your host, and this is going to be the final episode of Marking the Roll, not because I really want it to be, but because I've had a pretty nasty diagnosis of throat cancer and have to undergo some treatment, and I thought it was best that this be the last. Now, if something happens and it's I can talk again and make things clear, well, I may well revise it, but at the moment, this is going to be the final episode. And, you know, it's funny. When you get a diagnosis of cancer, you think, bugger it. I'm just going to let things rip here. I'm going to be pretty honest about how education has collapsed for Australian parents, for Australian teachers, and most certainly for Australian students. I'll be looking at some of the issues that I think are important for Australian parents and students and teachers to analyse, to look at over the next couple of years. And I'll be looking at one way that could completely change the education system in this country. And that is all to do with a rather boring idea of school funding, but you'll find it's not boring at all, and it could be the answer to your problems as a teacher or as a parent, and most certainly as a student. And now, one of the first things I'm going to let rip about is Respectful Relationships Australia and the fact that outside groups are now having incursions into primary schools and high schools where these so-called trainers, who often have no teaching experience and very little experience working with children, are able to teach kids about sex education, gender education. And the most recent news is from Renmark High School, where person who was from One Health came in to the Year 9 girls and started talking to them about bestiality. Some of the girls got so upset they left, and it was simply not on. Now, the big problem is, what on earth was this person who so, it seems, had lived experience in the topic? Good heavens. What were they doing teaching a class of Year 9 girls? Why didn't the principal ensure that there was another teacher in the room from the school who could have actually said, hey, that's enough of this, that's enough of this? And why weren't the parents told that this was going to occur? Now, in some ways, I feel sorry for this principal. Yes, they may be just a part of this whole transgender ideology, and they said, now, come on, let's go with this. I think that probably they aren't. They're simply too damn busy to tick all the boxes. But I think that this is not an isolated case. This is happening all over the country. That these individuals who are trainers from external organisations like Minus 18, and, of course, this last one from Renmark, come in and they talk to students about what is acceptable these days and how you should act about transgender ideology, and it's simply not on. And it's up to teachers to call it out, and actually up to parents to call it out. And parents have just been too damn kind for the last 3 years and said, oh yes, we love this gender and diversity inclusion stuff. It sounds so lovely. Yes, it sounds lovely, but there really is a wolf in sheep's clothing here, and there is a lot going on in Respectful Relationships Australian Education, and it's time for parents to say, that's enough, we've had enough, and our kids cannot be taught by these idiots. Now, as you might tell, you know, I'm quite prepared to let rip when you get a bad diagnosis. So that's the first thing for today. I'm going to look at a few other things as well. And one of these that I feel strongly about, and I know many teachers do, is the inclusion policy of having kids with quite extreme disabilities in a classroom. They're expected to learn what other students learn. They're expected to be evaluated in a similar way. And this inclusion policy has gone way too far. And the DEI types in the different state departments of education have really got to pull their heads in and look at what the majority of parents and students want. Students who don't fall into the disability category, and other disabled students who haven't got disabilities that inhibits their learning or their behaviour, are getting angrier and angrier that inclusion policy now includes kids who cannot behave in the classroom, who can't possibly learn, and are taking all of the attention from the teacher, which means the teacher can't give it to the other students, which are really, 85-90% of the students. Now, there are groups in this country who are really pushing for even more inclusion and for the closure of special schools, special setting schools. And that is absolutely ridiculous. I know New South Wales, good on them. They've come out and said that they support special setting schools. Tasmania is trying to get rid of all of them. So you'll have kids who have extreme disabilities going to standard schools, and you've got teachers trying to teach them in mainstream classes. Absolutely stupid. And whoever the bureaucracy of education is in Tasmania, I suggest you get into the real world. Now, before I have a brain aneurysm, I'd better get into the topic for this final episode. And that, as I said, is the idea of school funding, which is terribly, terribly boring. It sounds terrible. But it is quite exciting if you look at other models around the world. And about this time last year, I was in England and interviewed the headmistress of the Michaela School, Catherine Berbelting, about the Michaela School and how it got its funding and what the students were like and its discipline policy. Something that I didn't know was that in the UK there is such a thing as free schools. Now, free schools do not have to follow the government curriculum. They can have their own curriculum if they like. They can have their own discipline policy. They can employ their own teachers. And they can discriminate against certain teachers who might have different religious beliefs, for example. It is up to them at that free school. They've really got carte blanche, I suppose you'd call it, as to how they teach and what they teach. Michaela School is a free school, and that is one of the most outstanding schools in the UK because it takes kids from a not-so-wealthy area in Wembley. And these kids aren't high achievers, and suddenly they are achieving more than they ever thought they could because of the discipline policy. Now, I'm going to let Catherine Berbelsing tell you about how the Michaela School operates and how free schools operate. But I'll just fill you in on one thing, and that is in the UK, every school-age student is allocated an amount of money. And that amount of money can be spent by the parent wherever they wish. And in primary school, it's a certain amount of money. Let's say in Australian dollars, it's $10,000. And high school, it goes up a bit. Let's say it's $12,000. But the family can make the decision as to where the student goes, whether they go to a government school, whether they go to a free school, whether they go to academy school. So that is very different to the way it works in Australia. The parents get the say and the control about where their child and children go. Here's some words from Catherine Berbelsing, and the sound is a bit different because it was recorded in England on a small recorder about a year ago.
What is a free school?
The free schools in Britain came about in 2010. The idea is to give the school certain freedoms that perhaps ordinary community schools wouldn't have, to be able to do things differently.
But do you have to follow the national curriculum, everything that's in that?
So the freedoms that I referred to mean that you could not follow the national curriculum if you didn't want to. You could. Well, I suppose the idea is that you're meant to think differently. I have to say, there isn't a single free school that isn't following the national curriculum.
Everyone is, of course, they've got to do the same exams, I suppose.
They have to do the same exams. Parents would be very concerned if you were not, offering the national curriculum. But we are a free school and we have done things very differently, even though we're following the national curriculum. So the other thing that a free school is, like charter schools in America, is that it's a group of people who have set the school up, as opposed to it's just a school that's been set up by the government. People have got together, so I got together with like-minded other teachers, and we decided we wanted this ethos, and we were moving forward with it. Whereas with other schools, it's a bit more of a mixed bag. You'll get some teachers who are traditional, some teachers who are progressive, some teachers that are in between. All of our teachers here are traditional. And that's because we went forward, we started with that ethos. And we were very clear about it because it was a school that belonged to us. There's a sense of ownership over a free school or over a charter school that wouldn't necessarily exist with other schools.
Yes, and there's a forward direction in that school. This is what we want our students to be
That's right.
at the end of it.
And it could be anything. So there's a free
It could be, yeah,
school,
right.
Midlands, where we've got sheep and cows meet you and pigs meet you when you get out of the car in the car park. It's a completely different philosophy to our philosophy, but it's very much got a particular ethos and a particular
And
philosophy.
it's up to that school to create that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
In Australia at the moment, we have a national curriculum which goes from K to 12, and the national, it's fairly new, but the national curriculum has a lot of ideology, a lot of politics in it, and an example is that Captain Arthur Phillip, who settled Australia, came out with the first fleet, is only mentioned once in the entire curriculum. And Australia Day is called Invasion Day. Now, is the national curriculum in the UK, are you confronted with that sort of idealistic philosophies? And how, if you are, how do you get over it?
You all have the issue of white guilt around what happened to the Aborigines. We have white guilt with regard to the British Empire, slavery and colonialism. So the same way in which things I imagine have altered in Australia, and what I've heard from Australian teachers, I was there in October and met quite a number of them. I remember I went to the zoo while I was there in Sydney, and before the bird show, I forget what it's called.
A welcome to country.
Welcome to Country, that's it. Yeah. They said this thing. And I was thinking, what is this? It was a bit odd. And then when I told some people later on about it, they were saying, there was a welcome to country in front of the bird show, before the bird show. And I was saying, yes,
Why not
what
the
does that
bear show?
mean? So in fact, I heard it twice at the zoo. Bird show and some other show, penguins or something, I can't remember. But anyway, it's a standard thing. And the thing that the Australians who I was speaking to were shocked by was that this is even in the zoo. That for anything, you've got this welcome to country sort of explanation, and a way of sort of saying we're sorry for who we are, kind of thing. That reminds me in many ways of what happens here in Britain with regard to the way in which we teach our history nowadays. So even as little as 5 or 6 years ago, I do not think things had moved as much as they have now. A history conference that one of my teachers went to recently, the first lecture on the day was deconstructing whiteness in the history curriculum.
Oh dear, right.
So 5 years ago, that wouldn't have existed. And it's since George Floyd. So what is so fascinating about George Floyd, God rest his soul, is that he has become this sort of poster for any group that is oppressed. So he's gay, or he's Aboriginal, or he's
transgender.
Whatever it is, exactly. Whatever the issue is, he's representative of that group. And it means that since George Floyd, a lot has changed. And it is interesting because on the one hand, the people who are doing the changes say, we must recognize the terrible racism in society. We need to do something about it. Therefore, we need to change the curriculum. We need to deconstruct whiteness. We need to take whiteness out of the history curriculum. That's their goal. But at the same time, they deny that they're doing this. So they say, there's no such thing as woke. You're wrong to talk about wokeism.
Or culture wars. There's no culture war.
Exactly. And the thing is that, look, I'm quite happy with the people who say this is what needs to happen, and we can have that discussion. Should we be taking whiteness out of history or not? Let's have that discussion. But don't simultaneously argue for taking whiteness out of history and then say you're not doing it. Like, that's the thing that is so frustrating about this conversation.
Yeah.
Because there is definitely a culture war. And there are definitely two sides. There's one side that says, we're quite traditional, we'd like things to remain as they are. And there's the other side that says, oh my goodness, that way is really racist and oppressive to various groups, and we need to change things.
Yeah.
We should at least have the conversation about whether or not we should be making
these
changes.
We should be doing it or not. Yes, you know, we should be,
not pretending that we're not doing it and that it all happens by stealth.
Ah, it all happens by stealth. And isn't that what has happened in Australian education and often in Australian society generally? The changes are introduced, we don't vote for them. They're just gradually introduced, and it's like boiling a frog.
It's time to stop gender radicals telling your children they could be born in the wrong body. It's time to stop third-party businesses teaching your children about transgender ideas, bestiality, and being queer. If you're a teacher, parent, or anyone concerned about these things, please put your name to the Declaration of Biological Truth Australia. It's safe, easy, free, and you can sign privately so your name won't show. Over 1,000 parents, teachers, doctors, and concerned Australians have already signed. Just search for Declaration of Biological Truth Australia.
Now, here's Catherine Birbal-Singh talking a little bit more about the funding of free schools.
Government funding for the school,
mm-hmm.
is it the same as for a public, state?
Yeah, that's a good question. I should have said that with regard to free schools, which is that if you're a free school, the funding comes directly to the school instead of going to the council first. But, I mean, in the end, the council would just pass on the funding to the school, so it sort of ends up being the same. But the funding does come directly to it.
And it's the same amount?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I mean, I don't know about the arrangements that the other schools might have with regard to the council. It used to be once upon a time that the council would keep some of that money and then provide you with certain services. But I have to say that the vast majority of secondary schools in Britain are now either academies or free schools. And academies are exactly the same as free schools. The money will go directly to them.
So, each student is given a set amount throughout the UK. If you want to spend more than that amount and send them to a specific private school like Eton, well, you've got to pay for that. But every student is given the same initial amount. Now, it won't come to you in as a check made out to you. It'll go either to the school that you allocate, or it can go to your local council, and your council then says to you, where do you want the kids to go to school? And you tell them, and the council gives it out. So, you know, you can't go and spend it on new barbecues and cars. But that's completely different to the way that Australian education is funded. It seems that there is less control, but in this, there is more diversity in schools, and it means parents don't have to go to a certain school and abide by their rules if they don't want to. Now, you might remember when independent schools in the UK were called public schools, you know, like the Eton and the King's School and West Cathedral or Wells Cathedral School. But they're now really called independent schools. And if you want to send your kid to an independent school, yeah, you'll make sure that they get the same amount of money that every other child does, but you'll have to pay more, which is really fair enough, isn't it? That it would stop this public versus private argument. It would simply mean that if you want to send your child to the King's School or Trinity Grammar or Newington or Bridgerdine College, then you will pay more to do that. They'll still get the same amount of income as a public school child would draw, but you'll have to top that up in order to go to those schools. I think that would be a great way to try and equalise the payment or the funding of schools in Australia. But why don't we have that now? If all of the woke types are saying that we've inherited the worst of colonial UK, why haven't we inherited this? Just think about it for a sec. If the government is always in charge of funding, the government maintains control over schools, and it maintains control over curriculum and what is taught. In the UK, the government does not maintain control. Yes, most schools do follow a national curriculum or variations of it because the exams are the same. But in some schools, they don't teach certain parts because it doesn't fit within a belief system that they may have. So in UK, it's far more flexible and free, whereas in Australia, we have been doomed through government funding, and that means control of all our education. And Australia probably doesn't want to hand over government funding to, or school funding to the same method as the UK because, gee, governments will lose control, won't they?
So we have a lot of freedom here. This is for all schools, like academies, free schools, normal schools, any kind of school. You know, the school advertises for their staff, appoints their staff. They can move their staff on if necessary. That is all up to the school. I know in America, for instance, that doesn't happen. You are often just given your staff. Mm. And to move somebody on is impossible in America.
Mm.
Whereas here, it's much more straightforward.
Now think about it for a sec. If you're a teacher, would you rather continue to be told by state education bureaucracies, usually consisting of those who have never been in a classroom to teach, what to teach and how to teach it and what policies to follow? Do you want teachers to continue to be employed through diversity policies and inclusion policies, or do you want teachers to be employed on merit? Do you want, if you're a parent, do you want the principal to be employed on merit, or do you want them to be employed because they follow a certain ideology? Well, if you look at the UK model, you'll have a choice. And the school who doesn't follow what they say they're going to follow, well, they're going to lose their funding from, of course, parents are going to shift their child out of that school quick smart. One thing I did ask Catherine about was homeschooling. And if you homeschool your child in the UK, you get the same amount of money. So if you've got a child who would normally be, say, in year five, and normal year fives get $10,000 per year, then you'll get the $10,000 for the year. But you can't just, you know, spend it on, you know, barbecues. You've got to spend it on education for your child, which is fair enough. So I urge parents and teachers and even students to look up how schools are funded in other countries, and particularly the UK, because if the Michaela School is any indication of how well it works, it is a fantastic way of ensuring that the philosophies match those of the parents, and other ideology is not forced on to your child at all levels of their schooling. I'd love to see free schools start in Australia. I really look forward to it. But I thought I'd let Catherine Birbal-Singh finish this topic, although there'll be a couple of others towards the end, just on how she started it and what sort of opposition she experienced, but also what the parents are now saying about it.
Unfortunately, nowadays, in Australia, in Britain, in the whole of the Western world, in order to get things right with children, you have to go against the grain. That is unfortunately the situation we're in. And so it means that all of us has to be able to find enough courage to stand up against what everybody's telling you. And when I say everybody, I mean the teacher training colleges. I mean your friends. I mean, I remember I once ran in, I met this woman at a party and she said to me how she was going to leave London in a year's time because her eldest was 10 years old coming up towards secondary school. And so she and her husband and the children were going to leave because well, they had to get them into a decent school. And they were relatively well off. I said, well, you know, why don't you think about going to a private school? She said, oh, no, I couldn't do that. We'd lose all our friends. You know, now, and that's what I mean about having the courage. You need all of us, even if you're not involved directly in education. We all need the courage to be able to stand up to everyone we speak to, because that is what empowers people like us who are on the ground, knowing that there are families who want this, knowing that there are people in the media who will support us with this, knowing that the culture of our society is not one we're having to fight all the time. I mean, people who are willing to go against the grain when they're on their own and when they're going to be vilified by everyone. Most principals, most teachers just want normal lives. They want to be able to pay their mortgage. They want to have a car. They want to have a couple of kids. They want to have normal lives where they go in and they teach and they come back home. They don't want to take on the whole world. So I came here in 2011 and I rang the alarm bells and I said, look, you guys aren't as far along the progressive line as we have gone in Britain. I can tell you what it looks like. We've been there. Don't do it, is what I said. Don't go down that progressive route because you're going to end up failing your kids and your country is going to blow up. unfortunately, people didn't necessarily listen to me. And you have gone down that road. And now it's the case that you're 70th out of 77 countries for behavior, climate in your classrooms, how Australia has plummeted in the last 20 years. And of course, the children who most suffer because of this are the most disadvantaged. They're the ones that come from minority backgrounds, come from poorer backgrounds, and so on. And the reason why they suffer the most is because they are entirely dependent on their school to be able to make that difference for them. So if you come from a more well-off family, the family can make up that difference. The family takes you to museums on the weekend. They have dinners around the dinner table and talk about the politics of the day. They take you away on holiday to various places. And your parents, who's a professor and a doctor, you have conversations and they are teaching you all the time. But the child that comes from a poorer family, they don't have that. They are dependent entirely on their school and on their teachers. And if their teachers, through what they believe to be compassion, are constantly letting that child down by not holding them to account, that child has nowhere to go. And in the end, they end up in prison. They end up on welfare. They end up in some dead-end job. And then we say, well, they were poor. What else could they do? But it's not true. It's us who have failed them. We in the education sector have failed them because in the moment, we feel so uncomfortable about doing the right thing. Now, in 2011, I came here and said all that. It was at the same time that I had the idea about Michaela and we started setting it up. And the fight in Britain was massive at that time. It's much easier now to set up a free school. It took us 3.5 years to open our school because there was such a fight. And when I say such a fight, we would go along in Brixton Market, handing out flyers about our school. And mums would say, this is such a brilliant option. I'm coming along to find out. And all of these ethnic minority mums would be sitting in the audience, listening to me speak about this possible new school. And they would bus people in from outside of London so they would sit amongst the parents so that when I would get up and speak about the possibilities of a new school with all these mums who were desperate to have a new school. And when I say, when you want to talk about ethnic, you know, where the mums were ethnic, the people being bussed in were white from outside of London, would sit amongst the crowd, and then they would stand up and shout at me in order to drown out, not just me, but what me and my group were saying in order to set up the school. We had to move to 3 different areas eventually in London to eventually open up in Wembley. But we started in South London and we were chased from place to place until eventually, by really some kind of miracle, we managed to open our school in 2014. We opened with 120 children. We have been growing ever since. We've now got a full school. We've now, a couple of years, every year, we send a few off to Cambridge and to Oxford. But it's not just that. We've also got other kids who might become plumbers and hairdressers and so on. But they turn up on time. They know how to stand up and how to sit up straight. They know how to bring their equipment. They know how to say good morning and good afternoon, sir and miss, as they walk down the corridors. They are happy. And this is the point. You are happy when you are successful. You are happy when you know who you are and what you can deliver. Just recently, in the last few days, Progress 8 scores came out in Britain for schools. And the Progress 8 score is essentially how much progress have you made from when you joined at the end of primary to when you leave at the end of secondary school. And so these are secondary schools that are analyzed in this way. And we got this year the top Progress 8 score in the country.
So as Australia slips further and further down the world rankings of education, it's probably overdue that free schools are allowed to happen in this country. And as Catherine just said, it wasn't easy. There was opposition. There were activists against the idea of free schools. But she fought through it and her team fought through it. And it would be great to see that happen in Australia. But for that to happen, our entire system of school funding has to change, where each individual child is allocated a fee, and that can be spent wherever the parents want to send their kids to school. And thanks to the Centre for Independent Studies for the use of that last piece of audio from Catherine Birbal-Singh. Now, I said I was going to let rip on a couple of other issues, and one issue that really gets to me is the disproportionate amount of women in the education bureaucracy compared to men, and indeed in teaching compared to men. I know my favourite teachers at school were men, maybe because my father was absent a lot of the time, but I think it's so important for boys at school to have good male role models, and often this comes from having a great male teacher. Women make up 85% of the teaching workforce and well over 50% of the bureaucracy. Now, I'm not saying that women aren't good teachers. Women are fantastic teachers. I'm not saying women aren't good in the bureaucracy. No, that's not right. They're fantastic. But I'd like to see a gender balance. But there's another bit of an issue going on here too. Now, I've never worked in the bureaucracy, but many ex-teachers have. And they say that education departments in nearly every state have a disproportionate amount of LGBTQA members. I know in the recent Mardi Gras parade, the Department of Education in New South Wales had a float. I mean, really? I'm starting to wonder whether what other teachers have told me about this is completely true. Now, there's nothing wrong with that ideology, but when it is a disproportionate number of staff who all have that ideology and that lifestyle, you'd wonder whether it's good for education generally. And we know that through DEI employment policies, diversity, equity and inclusion employment policies, that people can be employed according to what they believe in, not because they are the best person for the job. And I feel that for the sake of education, we have to return to recruitment policies based on merit. Now, the last thing I'm going to let rip about is about welcome to country ceremonies. There's been lots of talk about welcome to country, and especially in education circles and in schools. I don't have much against a short welcome to country where it's necessary, where the context is right. But I've been to meetings at Macquarie University where virtually everyone who stands up to say something does a welcome to country. I mean, really? Do we need that? And before every meeting, do we need a welcome to country? I don't think we do. I think it's overdone. But I think the most overdone thing I have ever seen is the welcome to country for new science, medicine and biology students at the University of Wollongong in February 2024. This went for 1 hour. I went there and all of the students were gathered on this lawn, and there was a talk, and then by someone else played a little song and a didgeridoo. I thought that was the end of it. But no. The students were then told about the importance of the welcome to country, and they were told that they were going to walk the walk of the snake, and they were going to weave their way around a certain part of the campus in the pattern of a snake. First, they were going to have some ochre put in their hair, and then they were going to be doing the walk of the snake in a big line all the way around, which probably went for about 200-300 metres, I suppose. And then they were going to walk up towards the hall where they were going to have their orientation, and they were going to have the smoking ceremony. The smoke was going to put onto their face. And I thought, I'm amazed at this because the students haven't been given an opt-out. Now, I sometimes go to a Catholic church. I'm not Catholic, but I really like the ritual, the ceremony, and I love the singing. Now, I'm not forced to go and have some wafer and a bit of wine, and I never do. Even when there's a welcome to country at the football, say, you don't have to watch it. You can go downstairs and grab a beer, or you don't have to be engaged with it. But these students were not given an opt-out at all. And you might be thinking, oh, well, they could have walked away. Now, What 18-year-old is going to say, oh, look, excuse me, I really, this is against my belief system. I don't believe in the serpent and want to be doing this walk. I'm going to just go and stand over here. No 18-year-old student who's just going to university for the first time and wants to be on the good side of everyone is going to do that. So these students, I think, were coerced into doing this walk of the serpent, getting ochre in their hair, and I'm sure they didn't turn up to that day of orientation expecting to get ochre in their hair, nor expect to be breathing in smoke. I just hope there weren't many asthmatics. So it was way, way over the top. And I think welcome to countries in that context, people have got to be given an opt-out. Because no one forces you in a church to take the wine and the wafer. No one forces you to watch the Welcome to Country at the football or anywhere else. But these poor students, fresh out of high school, were really forced and coerced into doing it. That was simply not on. The University of Wollongong has become the University of Woke. Okay, well, thanks for listening to my Let It Rip segments. I think I've got that off my chest. There's a few people I'd like to thank for marking the roll. All of the teachers who have contributed, you know who you are. And for those who have supported marking the roll through donations and subscriptions over the last 2 years, I'd like to thank Lee Louise, who has helped certainly in the first year, and she has been working hard in the last year in her own job, in her own work. But thanks so much for your help. And Lee Louise is my partner, and in about a couple of weeks, she's going to be my wife. So thank you to everyone who has taken part in marking the roll. If something turns out better than expected, it could be revised, but I'm regarding this as the last episode. Thank you for listening, and have a good rest of 2024.